Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second episode of COE Mobility. I am your host, Justin Joseph, and I also happen to be Project COE's editor-in-chief, in addition to the to their primary content provider of all things related to mobile gaming. I mean, obviously, I'm not the only one, but at least I am the primary. Now, it's kind of funny. I'm sure that those of you who are listening in, and I do thank you for tuning in, you may have very well have written me off after my first episode. It's basically been already a couple weeks since that first recording, and I wouldn't be surprised if each of you listening out there thought that I was basically a one-trick pony, just kind of having, felt this really high swell of motivation to finally record a podcast and then dropped off from the face of the earth. And, and that's not an entirely unfounded attitude, I suppose. But, it's kind of funny. I actually, you're obviously listening again to this second episode, but I had three other recordings ready to go with this series, believe it or not. But unfortunately, the way that I was doing them just hasn't worked out, at least to the liking of Jared, who is obviously responsible for hosting up the majority of the content that you see on the site. And it's no knock on him at all, absolutely not. Basically, what I was trying to do was to sort of make this series more unique and try to, stand out from all the mainstream, podcast series that exist out there. I was literally driving on the way home from work, and I had a Bluetooth earpiece in, and it was synced to my HTC Thunderbolt, and I had an app on there that, at least at the time, seemed to prove to record my voice pretty well. But at the same time, I wasn't really able to avoid, the kind of, ambiance, background noise. I mean, it's the summertime here, and especially in Ohio, it's been devastatingly hot for the past few weeks or so. So I would, have my window down for the first several good minutes, and then, of course, my AC would be blasting at some point. So there was basically always something other than my voice being heard, and Jared didn't like that, and that's fine. I don't mind. So more or less, what you're listening to is basically the consolidation of episodes 2 through 4 that I had previously done in that exact context, now lumped into one giant episode 2. So I was hoping that wouldn't be long-winded, and I apologize if I have already bored you to death. But nonetheless, that is what has taken place. And I'm trying to do this in the way that I had done the first recording from now on, so we'll see how that pans out for us. So anyway, again, welcome to episode 2 of COE Mobility, where my goal is to cover as much relevant information from both the industry standpoint and my own personal experience when it comes to things mobile gaming related. So, with that out of the way, let's jump right into the material that I have prepared for this recording. So, basically a couple weeks ago, and let's see, let me make sure I have the exact dates. I think it's the 3 days that were before June 28th. So, June 25th through the 27th, so basically a couple weeks ago, I really went through a whole lot of drama when it comes to my relationship with Verizon Wireless. Now, in case your listeners aren't aware, and if you are actually a Verizon Wireless, service subscriber of some sort, whether you have just a standard flip cell phone, possibly a smartphone, one of their tablets, whatever the case might be, I had found out that past Sunday, so on the 24th, from one of my brothers-in-law, that they were changing their policy when it came to unlimited data. And what that entailed, and of course at first I thought he was completely crazy. I didn't hear anything like that, on the news or on the radio or anywhere that I typically scour, the internet for my news and what have you. I didn't anything about this, but he basically explained that Verizon was about to, not necessarily completely, but mostly do away with their unlimited data plans. And basically what I ended up finding out as I did my own personal research was that existing customers on the Verizon Wireless network that did use unlimited data could keep that. However, in the future, whenever they would be supposedly, you know, eligible for an upgrade or anything like that, they were no longer able to keep that unlimited data unless they bought a phone that was not subsidized, meaning that you didn't opt into a contract, and because of the contract fees and all the, you know, what you're billed for on a month-to-month basis, you wouldn't be able to purchase, you know, basically whatever it is, a 66% or so discounted phone. And on top of that, anyone that wasn't already using unlimited data, and especially, you know, of course, new customers, unlimited data is no longer accessible to you if you go for using Verizon Wireless's services. You talk about a bunch of garbage, if you ask me. And it really just caused me a mess of stress because, of course, I'm a heavy data user. I mean, I browse the internet and stream videos and listen to things and, you know, download, you know, memory sucking apps basically on a weekly basis on my phone. And at the time, it was an HTC Thunderbolt. I decided to bite the bullet and adopt basically the first generation 4G device that they had, you know, put up for sale there. Well, it was like, I remember, like April of 2011, I believe I did that. And why I'm saying it caused me a mess of drama is because I wasn't interested in sticking with a subpar device, which, you know, the Thunderbolt isn't a terrible device on its own, but it is an obvious first generation device when it comes to, you know, the specifications, the performance, what it's able to do, and just, you know, just in terms of what it offers compared to obviously what's available now. So instead of, you know, keeping that phone until next April of 2013 and then being forced to pay, you know, upwards of $500+ for a retail priced phone, I basically decided that I need to try to save money, and I went on a very furious, you know, investigation research spree to try to figure out what phone I could possibly acquire in its place, so that I would not only be able to maintain that unlimited data, but also at least have a better phone altogether. So that took me from Monday of the 25th until Wednesday afternoon the 27th, where I finally, after I had initially purchased the Samsung Galaxy Nexus, which was a nice device, but unfortunately my data connection never really worked properly, and I wasn't interested in playing the game of having them send me just a bogus, you know, certified pre-owned model in its place to basically end up dealing with the same thing. So instead, I graduated from the Thunderbolt to the HTC Resound, which is what I now have. So I don't know, like I said, if you listeners subscribe to Verizon Wireless's services, and this obviously basically only applies to the United States. I don't think that this company exists per se elsewhere, and obviously correct me if I'm wrong, I haven't really done that research, but I don't think that Verizon, they probably do exist elsewhere, but I don't think, like I know especially my boss Jared on the site, he has a completely different provider for his Apple devices and what have you. But nonetheless, I just think that is totally bogus what Verizon has done, and not to mention that the other three major U.S. providers, you know, being T-Mobile, Sprint, and AT&T, they still offer an unlimited data package of some sort. You know, it's not hidden. You don't have to, you know, try to weasel your way into keeping it like I did with, you know, purchasing. And my Resound was actually an upgrade from my family plan. I'm on a family plan and had an upgrade available to me. So that's the only reason why I ended up actually doing that, because otherwise it was pointless for me to, you know, to pick up a new phone when I could have just as easily waited, you know, the year that I could have and picked up, you know, the next latest and greatest quad core, you know, 2 gigabyte RAM, whatever else might have been available on the market, you know, around this time next year. So it was a very frustrating time for me, I do admit, and I did try to keep my attitude in check as I am supposed to, but it definitely was a humongous test for me. So hopefully, like I said, if any of you listening out there were affected by this, hopefully you were able to catch it in time and possibly take advantage of an upgrade or so if it was available to you like I did. But if you didn't, then, you know, I guess we're all kind of in the same boat now. You can no longer purchase a subsidized phone and maintain your unlimited data as a current unlimited data customer. And if you're a new customer, you know, going to them, you know, that being Verizon from either of the three other providers, you won't have any access whatsoever to unlimited data. You have to opt for one of their shared tiered plans, which I think goes as high as maybe 3 gigabytes or whatever. And, you know, if you're a heavy data user, that is never going to be satisfactory for your activity. So just kind of a very unfortunate state of affairs with you know, what Verizon has chosen to do with its business model. And, you know, I'm all for businesses making money. They should be, you know, they should make profits. I'm not one of those, you know, crazy people that think that businesses are evil for making money, because, you know, that's obviously how they expand, how they hire new employees, how they, you know, expand their market base, their inventory, and so on and so forth. But I definitely don't think that Verizon was very wise with what they decided to do here. And who knows? I mean, it may end up working out for them in the long run. I can't obviously predict that, but given how much uproar I saw, especially on various, you know, Android and Apple message boards with what Verizon did with this, it just doesn't look very good for them, and it'll be interesting to see how it pans out in the next several months or so. So that's it for that particular topic, at least. In terms of my opinion on the HTC Resound, the new device that I have now, do keep in mind I actually have both HTC devices still with me. I did not, I didn't dispose of my Thunderbolt at all. I actually still have it in my possession, and I still actually play some of the games that I have downloaded on it. That being one of them being Xenonia, because I can't transfer the save files from that to the Resound. And it's really not a big deal for me to continue playing it on that device. It's still perfectly fine and capable, you know, portable and what have you. But in terms of the Resound, overall, it's obviously much improved experience over the Thunderbolt. It has the HTC Sense, I think, 3.5 version that comes in the stock device, in addition to Android 2.3.4 Gingerbread, which is obviously the same thing that the Thunderbolt has if you've updated it to the extent that it can be so far. It's got a beautiful 720p HD display, and I think that might be like either the top or in the top three displays on a smartphone that are available for United States smartphone customers. And then it comes with a free $120 pair of iBeats earbuds. Now, of course, that probably costs like, what, $10 to make. So you imagine that 120% markup. I don't know if that's the correct math, but it doesn't matter. Either way, it comes with a very nice pair of free iBeats earbuds. And then going back to the specs, it's got the 1 gigabyte of DDR3 RAM, I think. I didn't write those down. I should have. I apologize for this. But either way, it's got that, the dual-core processor, which is, I think, just the evolution of the 1 gigahertz Snapdragon processor that the Thunderbolt has. And then in terms of the actual device itself, it's very strange how HTC decided to implement the buttons along the sides in terms of the power and volume control, because they're just kind of these little flimsy, rubber-ish kind of buttons that are not really easy to press, because they kind of are like basically flush with the device itself. It's like it's not an obvious thing to press on it. So I've actually found myself often in the past couple of weeks actually having to look directly at the thing to actually, you know, change the volume either on the ringer or on the media volume. and what have you, and the same thing with the power. The power isn't nearly as complicated because it's basically in the same spot that it was on the Thunderbolt, so you just basically have to press exactly where that was before, and I generally get it to accept it. But the volume is just kind of strange. I don't know why they have it so flush with the actual material of the device. It doesn't really protrude that much, and therefore makes actually adjusting the volume a tad bit complicated. And that's especially, you know, if you have one of those, cases, those guards that wrap around the back of the phone, and obviously along the sides of it as well. And then you have that little, strip that's been cut out for the actual volume input that makes it even more complicated in that respect. So I don't know what HTC was thinking when they did that, but, you know, obviously no phone is going to be perfect, so I will take it as it is. And then when it comes to the recharge port, it's kind of interesting. They basically still maintain the micro USB port, but they kind of changed it to be more of like a, I don't know, sort of like a D shape. It's not the same thing as the Thunderbolts or even most of the other phones that have sort of that, you know, the flush and flat connector. To it's kind of got a little bit of a upward bend on the bottom of the piece there, and you know that's probably a horrible illustration for you guys, but either way it's proprietary, and I don't think it can fit in any of the other phones, so it's kind of lame that you can't just use the cable that the Thunderbolt came in. But again, it's really not the worst thing in the world, so take that for how you will. In terms of the rest of the experience, it's basically just like the Thunderbolt. I mean, there's various slight improvements in terms of the internet browsing, and you know, obviously the speed of the device is better. You can do things quicker in terms of apps loading and browsing the internet and stuff like that. Nothing entirely complicated there, but overall it's a very solid device. I mean, it's definitely not perfect, and ultimately, if the Galaxy Nexus had given me a much more reliable data connection, I probably would have actually stuck with that particular phone. But nonetheless, this is what I decided to go with in the long haul, and it's not really been disappointing. I mean, obviously, every smartphone has glitches, various nuances that you're just not going to like, things that don't really work as well as you think that they should, but you just have to take the good with the bad. And when it comes to the Resound, it's definitely much better than it is not so good. So sort of, I guess, a general opinion of mine that I can offer to you guys there for those of you who might happen to be in the market for either an upgrade or even possibly entering the smartphone market for the very first time. So just keep that in mind, I guess, if you will. So then moving on, I will go ahead and talk about something very interesting that I saw on my tablet, my Asus Transformer Pad. There is a new app called Envision, which is N-V-I-S-I-O-N, and I think it's basically sort of an app that NVIDIA, the maker of the Tegra 3 chip, decided to create so that people who use the devices that Envision is available on can actually, you know, basically keep up on the news in terms of devices, movies, games, and all sorts of things, mobile gaming related and media related too, that that'll take a special advantage of the Tegra 3 processor, or just things that you might enjoy in general when it comes to playing games on tablets or phones, and movies as well. But the thing that caught my eye the most whenever I actually downloaded this app yesterday was this bit of news that I saw that Niko and NVIDIA are actually partnering to create one of the, I guess you would consider it first official, well, probably not first official, but at least an official line of physical controllers that will be specifically dedicated to Android gaming. And I was like, whoa, you know, that's pretty sweet. I mean, obviously there are third-party options out there in terms of, you know, Bluetooth controllers that you can purchase that will, you know, help you to enjoy gaming on your tablet or smartphone better, you know, and especially along the lines of emulation, you know, your Super Nintendo, regular Nintendo, Nintendo 64, PlayStation, Genesis, and etc., along those lines. But these two companies are preparing this coming fall of 2012 to launch a controller that is specifically dedicated to help those of us who are in the hardcore crowd actually enjoy games better on our tablets and smartphones. So I think that their aim is to basically draw in more people who would be playing games like, you know, Shadowgun and Modern Combat 3, you know, Nova 3, and let's see what else is there. Just a lot of those 3D sophisticated titles. You know, you got Spider-Man, a lot of those games from Gameloft. You know, you got Dead Space and Need for Speed, Hot Pursuit, just a whole bunch of games that are more sophisticated than the typical ones that we're used to seeing. You know, it's not obviously Angry Birds or any of those touch games, you know, or games with friends, you know, with Scramble, Words, and then Hanging and stuff like that. So it's kind of interesting that this is about to come upon us. And the controller itself comes in multiple colors, you know, for those that obviously care about that stuff, not myself, but you can always cater to people with those colors. But it also has two analog input sticks in addition to the four face buttons, and I believe that the letters coincide with what you see on the Super Nintendo controller with X, Y, and A and B, in addition to of course, the D-pad. And I don't remember if I saw triggers on the device, but I think that they were actually there. I'll go ahead and check back on that and update myself appropriately if I'm wrong there. But either way, it's encouraging to see that, because as I've been sort of discussing with our boss, Jared, on the site a handful of times over the past several weeks, we both kind of just lament the reality that, you know, smartphones and tablet users that are interested in hardcore gaming, you know, games that are, you know, fully 3D and you know, require complex inputs, you know, and especially with first-person shooters, and you have to have that virtual stick, and then you shift your view by swiping your finger across the screen, and then you have to actually hit an icon to fire your weapon and things along those lines, and it just gets complicated. You can't really... You just cannot replicate the experience of a console or a PC even with experiences like that, that, you know, where touchscreen is your only input option. So we've, you know, sort of discussed that back and forth, and we were just wondering, and it's like, you know, where are these companies that should very well be trying to take advantage of people? I mean, and of course, you know, smartphones and tablets, millions of those have been sold, and easily much more so, you know, than the popular consoles, you know, with the Wii and the Xbox and the PlayStation. And you would think that even though, or should I say, in spite of the fact that Android is not a unified operating system on its devices, it's still, you know, a very popular way of using a mobile device, you know, smartphone and tablet related. And then you, of course, you have the millions and millions of people who own iPhones and iPads. And yet there just have not been devices, you know, designed to be dedicated to those sophisticated gaming experiences. Now, I could keep going on and on and on about this, but I don't want to, and I'm sure I've already bored you to death about this particular topic. But I just found it to be exciting that Niko and NVIDIA are creating what I think they basically just are calling it the Android gamepad. I don't think it's anything fancier than that when it comes to the brand. So it's supposed to come out in this fall. And, you know, hopefully the pricing is not exorbitant. You know, I'm not going to be interested in it if it's like $69.99 or whatever. Hopefully it's in the, you know, the 25 to 50 range, and obviously preferably at the lower end of that. And we'll see. I didn't see any of that information in the article that Envision had in respect to this. So we shall see, and I am definitely looking forward to what is possibly in store as a result of that being made available to us. Okay, so moving on from that, I think I'll just go ahead and tackle one more topic in terms of what I've personally been playing, what I intend to cover on the site in the coming days and weeks, hopefully being. And, I just have a list here, so I guess I'll just go ahead and cover each one individually. Today, I sampled a little bit of the new game, which is a first-person shooter, and in case you haven't realized by now, I'm basically a huge fan of those games or types of games on mobile devices, in spite of the fact that they're obviously not that very, not that convenient to control. But Madfinger, who is responsible for Shadowgun, has put out Dead Trigger, which is their, I guess, first first-person shooter for Android and iOS devices. And it's on sale right now on both app stores, I believe, for 99 cents. Now, do understand I haven't gotten that far in it, so I likely haven't come across the the aspects of the game that, based on all the user reviews that I've seen for this game, force you to try to buy things within the game itself, which are called, you know, in-app purchases, and apparently they're like the bane of existence for mobile gamers and what have you, because they, you know, think it's one of those nickel and diming schemes, like DLC is considered, you know, on the console side of things. But nonetheless, it is a fun game so far. I mean, you start off with an automatic weapon, and you're basically thrust into very specific missions. And the idea of the game is that the city has become widely infected with some kind of viral outbreak. You know, obviously nothing original there. But nonetheless, it is a very sophisticated 3D game with a lot of polish. And, you know, it's been fun so far. I played it on my Resound. I have it downloaded on my Transformer Pad, but I haven't gotten around to sampling it yet. But at the same time, it's kind of interesting that Madfinger seems to have kind of, in a way, alienated people who will be interested in this game, not just from the standpoint of the in-app purchases, but also the fact that they have made a certain visual elements of the game, kind of like the, I guess, which includes the ragdoll physics and even just special effect, you know, with the water and fog and shadow and lighting and stuff like that. They've made it exclusive to those who have devices that are equipped with the Tegra 3 processor chip. Now, I don't know what the motivation of that was. I don't know why they did that. I don't know if that's, you know, an understandable thing to have done. I'm not an expert, you know, obviously, in when it comes to mobile game development. But I do think it is just a tad silly that, given how much more advanced and capable smartphones have become, and especially with the new, the Samsung Galaxy 3, I think, which has the quad-core processor and what have you, and all the others that are still available on each of the provider's networks, it just doesn't really make much sense that Madfinger would make those visual effects exclusive to one particular processor. I mean, again, I could be just completely bonkers about that. It may have been a completely legitimate decision, but it seems that both the in-app purchase element and the exclusivity of the visual content has made people quite upset when it comes to the user reviews. Now, surprisingly enough, it has maintained on at least the Play Store a 4 out of 5 star rating, which, you know, is kind of mind-blowing, and I think, I don't even know, I don't think there's even 500 reviews yet total on that particular game. But if people are that unhappy about it, and I would expect that there have been plenty of, you know, 1 and 2 star ratings as a result of those couple of unfavorable elements of the game, that the rating would not be nearly as high. But I guess in that case, despite people complaining, they still believe that the game is good, and it definitely is. It's been entertaining so far in the first couple missions that I've particularly experienced so far. It's, you know, it's got great visuals. The character models, especially the zombies, they look, you know, basically just as you would expect them to. And it just goes really to show you that mobile gaming is rapidly catching up to the console market. And actually, you know what? I might as well just use that as a segue to talk about Nova 3 here. I actually have finished that game. I completed the campaign on normal difficulty this past weekend, and I've also hopped online several times to compete in various team deathmatch modes. So I am actually not just ready to review it, but have already been in the process of doing so. I have a piece that I'm currently working on that's about, at the time of this recording, 70% or so ready, and I'm hoping by the end of the week, if possible, to actually officially post that up on the site. And I'm also wanting to do a comprehensive review for the With Friends games, but I don't want to get on a rabbit trail there. When it comes to Nova 3, it's a very, very interesting opinion that I will offer, because it is both, Nova 3 is both a great game and a not so great game. Now, I'm not going to spoil anything, and I really don't want to tell you what ultimately I'm going to say as, you know, a verdict or anything, but I'll just say, if nothing else, that Nova 3 is easily the prettiest, if not one of the most beautiful games for mobile gaming. I mean, I basically have discussed with Jared on the site that it could very well pass off as a first-generation Xbox 360 or PlayStation 3 game, and you know, you can argue that all you want, but you know, that's just the reality. Gameloft has really pulled off a wicked-looking game with Nova 3. You know, it really is fun. I will definitely say that, but there's just one too many unfortunate problems with it, and that's really all where I want to leave that particular my particular opinion verbally here, because I would much rather explain myself more comprehensively, more clearly, more detailed in my written review. So I will hopefully have that ready for you guys by the end of the week. But nonetheless, I mean, it is available on both marketplaces, and I think for $6.99, I don't think that Gameloft charges different prices for new releases of their games. And it definitely, I think, is worth it. I don't think that it's any kind of ripoff. And especially, you know, given the previous games in the past have run for that exact price and certainly not been nearly as sophisticated or nearly as polished. So absolutely no complaints about the price. And truly, you know, truth be told, in general, I don't complain about the prices of these mobile games, because compared to, you know, paying $59.99 or $69.99, whatever the case might be, and especially, you know, for a lot of those special editions of games that are released on consoles, I think it's absolutely nothing to complain about. And those that do on the Play Store especially, it's just, you know what, just if you don't like it, don't play games, honestly. Because if you have to whine and moan and complain about, you know, spending a few bucks for a game that is ultimately, you know, not that bad. I mean, there's definitely a lot of crap on both app stores. I absolutely do not deny that, but just it's incredible to see how society has come when it comes to the, you know, just this sense of entitlement and people thinking that they just deserve these perfect games from every company with every product that they put out there. And it's just it's disappointing and discouraging to see that kind of stuff. But thankfully, I don't pay attention to it so much, so I could very well be in the minority with what I just said there. So either way. But anyway, when it comes to Nova 3, very good game. Just unfortunately a lot of problems that I'll, like I said, describe in my review. And we'll see how that works out. Otherwise, other than that, I've also been playing Xenonia. I've been trying desperately to get further in that so I can finish it. It is a unfortunately longer than I would like a game, especially for a mobile title. But I guess whenever it is basically Zelda on a mobile device, what do you ultimately expect? I'm up to level, I think, 45 with my character in that quest. And I'm also playing a very interesting game, which I think was originally released on PC and available in various other ways, called Anomaly HD. Anomaly HD Warzone Earth. I'm pretty sure that's the title. Anyway, it's very interesting. It's kind of basically turns tower defense upside down. And it's kind of, I guess, really, if you want to be blunt, a tower offense game where you're actually going through an area that has towers ready for you when you're supposed to destroy them, rather than you setting up towers to destroy some oncoming threat. It's a very interesting take on that genre, and I do applaud the developers for the creativity there. Now, it is fun, definitely, but it's also really, really hard. I think I'm on mission 8, and given how I think I'm aware there's like, what, 15, 20 some missions like that, or I can't really remember. Always so prepared for these things, am I not? But nonetheless, even just like mission 4, it just was like, it was tough, because you really have to be on your toes, be paying full attention to where you're headed on the map, the status of your units in terms of what their strength is, what their health is, and just the timing that you're shooting for to take down the enemy structures while also reaching the end point so that you can receive the highest ratings. There's like, I think there's two medals that you achieve based on how quickly and how efficiently you played. And again, I'm not even sure about that, which is, again, just a wondrous representation of my wisdom here. But nonetheless, it is a fun game, and it's actually a very pretty game at that. So, if anything, I think it's, what, $2-3 or something like that on the app stores there. So if Tower Offense sounds like something appealing to you, by all means, give that one a go. Okay, so let's see. Do I want to tackle Amazing Spider-Man? I'll just say a few things about that. I went to see that with my wife over the weekend. It's actually the first movie that we have seen together since we have been with each other. And unfortunately, the previews beforehand were less than ideal for what we believe in terms of right and wrong and what have you. But not going to get into that because you're not interested. But the movie itself, I thought was very good. I don't actually have any knowledge of the Spider-Man universe from the comic book standpoint. The only exposure I have to the franchise is the original Spider-Man animated series that used to be a very popular Saturday morning cartoon. And believe it or not, I actually listened to 6 episodes of that while I was working today, and it was kind of funny to go back to that and kind of enjoy the nostalgia. And it's actually, it really holds up well. I mean, obviously the animation is not nearly as sophisticated as it could be now, but I mean the humor has really kept up, and even the plots, 20 minutes is not a long time for a Spider-Man story, and they still manage to somehow do it very well. So even for young kids such as I that really didn't know ultimately what was going on per se, they did a really good job. But then when it comes to the Amazing Spider-Man, I really don't know, what inspired it, what universe, whether it was the comics, the cartoons, whether there are novels out there, I don't even know. But either way, I did appreciate the movie. I thought it was well done. I did enjoy the relationship between Peter Parker and Gwen Stacy. And even the Lizard, I mean, the Lizard was kind of cheesy with the CGI and everything, but overall, I enjoyed the movie. I don't know if I will. It seems pretty obvious that this is going to be a new trilogy from Sony. I don't know if I'll end up liking it more than the previous one with Tobey Maguire and Kirsten Dunst, but it's just a matter of personal preference. And as much as I see people just constantly flogging each other with comments, especially on sites like IGN or just any movie site where you, or any site for the matter where you can post comments, I really wonder what lives people think that they're leading and living by just consuming themselves with having the last word and insulting others for their desires, for their likes and their preferences. Just makes no sense to me. If you like the movie, more power to you. Great. That's how it should be. You spent the money, and if you think the movie was good, great. And if you don't think the movie was good, great. Just keep your opinions to your, well, not necessarily to yourself, but be respectful. That's all I say. But either way, I did enjoy the movie. I don't know if I liked it more than the first one. In the previous trilogy, I think I basically liked them equally. I mean, obviously, very different personalities for Spider-Man as a character, and the action was quite a ways different too, but different take, different director, different producer, and I'm sure a lot of the staff basically are brand new, and whatever. So fun movie, and if you take your kids to see it and even like superheroes yourself, you really shouldn't be disappointed. So that's basically my brief take on that film. And I do look forward, actually, in a few weeks whenever Batman, the third one from Christopher Nolan, The Dark Knight Rises, comes. Because I'm gonna take my wife to see that one too, and it'll probably be the only two movies that we actually see this entire year, which is no big deal because neither of us are really avid moviegoers. I hadn't actually seen one prior to The Amazing Spider-Man probably for a good couple years, if not longer. So it's not exactly a humongous priority for us. All right, guys, it's been way long enough, almost at 40 minutes here, and I'll probably eclipse that before I actually hit the stop button here. Either way, I do want to thank you for joining me on this episode, which is now officially episode 2 of COE Mobility. Thank you very much for tuning in. As always, please keep it tuned in to our website, projectcoe.com, for all the latest content that we have for you on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis. Please indeed follow us also on Twitter, project_COE. Then we also have YouTube and Facebook pages, Project COE altogether. It's not that hard to find us, and we just always, always, always appreciate your support and give you much thanks for not just that, when it comes to visiting the things that we put out there for you guys to enjoy, but then the handful of you guys out there that join us on the actual site and actually, you know, participating in the conversations that ensue with the things that are posted there. We always appreciate that kind of stuff. So by all means, please do all those things for us if you would. And you also do have the option of donating to the cause. We are obviously independent. We have absolutely no official corporate or even private funding. So if you want to help us keep going and to continue to evolve and eventually release our COE 3.0 version of site, which would really just completely relaunch the COE community as a whole, by all means, consider that and possibly click the donate button on our homepage. And, you know, whatever you would be willing to contribute is great. So we definitely appreciate your interest in that respect. All right, guys, thank you very much for tuning in. Hopefully I'll be back either sometime later this week or next week with episode 3 of COE Mobility. Hopefully you are enjoying this series with the two that obviously have been recorded here thus far. Please leave a comment wherever you happen to be listening to it, if you might be so inclined. And even if it's criticism, by all means, but if you just, you know, have a comment of gratefulness for what I presented here, that would be great too. Whatever you want to. So, thanks guys for tuning in. I'll see you next time. Thanks a lot.